Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, December 13, 2017. The UN says it needs more than $1 billion to help millions of South Sudanese next year.
These are figures that the government also confirmed, and I believe these figures with the new year will actually increase. As you already heard of the recent attack in Jongle, a lot of people were killed, displacement.
And a South Sudanese activist says he is not returning to Juba.
If whatever we say in social media, it is the right of the people, it is the right, those right of the marginalized communities, and it is the human right which has been abused.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations is asking for more than $1.7 billion to provide life-saving humanitarian assistance to 6 million people across South Sudan next year. A senior UN official in South Sudan says the bulk of the money would be used to provide food assistance, health care, and education. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
Alan Nodio, the UN Humanitarian Coordinator for South Sudan, teamed up with Hussein Marnot, South Sudan's Humanitarian Affairs Minister, to launch the 2018 Humanitarian Response Appeal today in Juba. Nodio blames the ongoing conflict for the country's deteriorating humanitarian conditions.
There's indeed a growing need for humanitarian assistance, with displacement, food insecurity, malnutrition, violence, and economic decline, all combining to take a heavy toll on the health, the safety, and the livelihood of people in need in South Sudan.
Nodio says women and children in South Sudan bear the brunt of the conflict, which has caused acute malnutrition.
Approximately half of South Sudanese children under the age of 5 experience acute malnutrition. Half. And 2 out of 3 pregnant women or lactating women, mothers, also are just to be malnourished.
Nodio is urging the international community to donate generously in order to save lives of millions of South Sudanese amid the worsening humanitarian conditions across the country.
We are appealing for $1.72 billion to continue providing humanitarian assistance and protecting 6 million people in desperate need in South Sudan. The situation is dire, and I'm asking the donor community not to relent and to give urgently as we enter a period at the beginning of the year when level of food insecurity are expected to reach new heights.
Last year, the UN called for $1.6 billion to provide life-saving assistance this year. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says they received more than 70% of the 2017 funding appeal, which allowed humanitarian organizations to deliver various forms of assistance to 5 million people in South Sudan. Nodio says, for aid workers to do their job, government and armed groups must allow unhindered access to people in need.
Humanitarian workers who sometimes risk their own life to provide assistance need to be fully protected and supported by all of us.
Nyot admits the situation for millions of South Sudanese is dire. He says recent violence in Jonglei State and parts of former Lakes State threatens to create even a bigger humanitarian crisis.
The figures mentioned by the humanitarian coordinator, these are figures that the government also confirmed. And I believed these figures with the new year will actually increase. As you already heard of the recent attack in Jongle, a lot of people were killed, displacement. Now, as we speak, there are crises in Gok and Western Lagos State.
Nyot vowed that the Kiir administration will work closely with humanitarian aid agencies to ensure safe access to people in need across the country. 167 aid organizations aim to implement various projects under the 2018 Humanitarian Response Plan. Those include 95 national non-governmental organizations, 61 international NGOs, and 11 United Nations entities. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
A South Sudanese activist says he fears traveling back to Juba Daniel Yor Deng says security operatives are targeting activists like him in the capital. Yor says national security agents have threatened activists like himself around the country. So he says he will continue to operate from Kenya.
In South Sudan, police is not doing what it's supposed to do. It is national security is working as a police. So if the national security, as what we have heard, you can be arrested by national security, and it is not their work. It is the work of police. So it seems that police is vulnerable. They are not doing what it's supposed to do. National security is the work. These are the people who are doing the police work. So if the problem being found by national security, they have to report it to police. But if they don't report it to police, then they are the one out to arrest people. So it gives us too much fear.
No, but why would you fear, Daniel? Why would you fear when you have not committed any crime?
You see, we are social media warriors. And being a social media
warrior... tell me more about that. What so is social media warrior?
Yes, if you are social media warriors, who need to articulate the issues of the people. Some of the people, they don't need to be questioned. And if they don't need to be questioned, they use the powers which they had in their hand. So that affects us seriously. But if whatever we say in social media, it is the right of the people, it is the right, right of the marginalized communities, and it is the human right which has been abused, Mr. John. So when you are being known in South Sudan as the person who can say what, and then you might be having a followers, you cannot allow to be given a space.
So you are afraid that your footprint on the social media will cause problems if you go back to South Sudan?
Yeah, it caused problem to me because I might be a victim, because this is where now I will be confined. So I'll be a victim, yeah.
And so with this, what is the way forward? You have confined yourself into Nairobi and you're still talking about the issues in South Sudan.
We have to talk outside. There is no problem with talking outside South Sudan, because we have more than 50,000 South Sudanese in Kenya. So we have to talk on their behalf. It does not mean if you are in South Sudan, that is where you can talk. You can talk where you can have a space to speak. Mm-hmm. So our staying in Kenya, it is not bad. It is a second home for us. So we can talk. We can talk.
When you talk about South Sudan, what are the issues that you want to change? Because you told me that you're an activist, you work for change. What are the things that you want to change in your country?
I think South Sudanese, they know what they fought over 21 years. If they know very well, we fought for the rule of law. We fought for us being made as a second citizen. Equality, this is what we fought. So today, people have forgotten. There are people who want to use other people to be a second citizen. So we need to recover what we lost. If we've forgotten what we fought for with Sudan, like we fought for democracy, we fought for equality, we fought for social service to be given to the people. So what makes us now to stay in Kenya? We don't have buses to think that we fought for. It seems like we were lying to have a country. We need to have a strong institution. A strong institution whereby each and every person have a say. If it is a matter of constitution, this constitution has to be given to the people. If it is a matter of like those institutions, like security institutions, those they need reform, because those who are there, maybe some of the guys they don't read. As long as they know themselves they are in power, they can do whatever, and they do away with you those who can read. So the reform need to be done in South Sudan. We need a complete reform.
That's Daniel Yor Deng, acting chairman of the South Sudan Peace Coalition. He spoke with me in Kigali last month. The Trump administration recently lifted sanctions on Sudan, but a new report by Washington-based Enough Project says additional punitive measures are needed to pressure the government in Khartoum to allow religious freedom. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
The report called Sudan's oppression of religious minorities and embrace of extremist groups says there is continued persecution against religious minority groups such as Christians in Sudan. The report argues that Sudan's ties to violent extremist groups should create uncertainty in Sudan's role as a counterterrorism partner. Suleiman Baldo, the report's co-author and senior policy advisor at the Enough Project, adds the stakes are high for Sudan, a country eager to have its name lifted from the list of state sponsors of terror.
The U.S. has really emphasized that to really lift these sanctions, Sudan has to show concrete and tangible results in terms of improvements at the level of human rights, in terms of not deviating from, you know, the five tracks to which they, you know, committed and showed some restraint to earn the, you know, the lifting of the fairest set of sanctions. And we are arguing that on the area of countering international terrorism, Sudan would have to account for its accommodation and embrace of extremist groups that propagate the ideology.
Baldo says there are several steps the United States can take to implement reforms. In particular, he says, the U.S. should address Sudan's accountability issues by considering asset freezes or measures that target a network of well-connected individuals in Sudan.
There is a lot of kleptocracy in the country. You know, the regime is corrupt structurally. There is official protection of corruption, and this puts Sudan as a country of high risk in corrupting international financial systems through money laundering and attempts to recycle, into the international financial system the proceeds of massive official corruption.
Baldo adds the U.S. should move quickly and aggressively to create fundamental reforms. He adds the laws should be aligned with the guarantees that are in the Constitution.
And we believe that this should also be required, from Sudan to change and really introduce measures of accountability for public funds and transparency and to really crack down on corruption instead of tolerating it. So this is, also a key condition. And a last condition in my mind would have to be, you know, legal reforms and reforms in the judicial system that would guarantee the fundamental rights of the Sudanese as they are stated in the current enforced constitution of the current of the country, but that they are not, applied in any way, shape or form. There are contradictions between law and the constitution, and it shouldn't be.
Baldo says it's clear that Sudan wants to be removed from the list of state sponsors of terrorism. He says U.S. officials can use that as leverage to urge the country to introduce fundamental reforms. Ayan Bior for VOA News, Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, gold mining is illegal but lucrative in South Sudan. Find out where it's happening when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the most dangerous situation you have ever been in?
When the war broke out on the 8th, so it was really, really very bad situation, hearing gunshots all over, seeing people being killed next to me, and that is the worst situation I've ever been.
We were robbed. People were killed, a pregnant one was killed, people were injured, so I was like close to death. That was the most life-threatening situation I've been.
I got stranded at the area I went to, and it was a risky place, actually. So I got confronted by people, and it took a while for me to get myself out of that situation. Someone even showed me, like, a weapon, and I had to, like, man over myself to get away.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Some residents in Kapoita State say they earn a living from mining gold. Gold mining is illegal in South Sudan. Local miners say they sell up to 30 grams of gold in a week. Dimo Silva Aurelio just returned from Kapoeta and has this report for VOA from Juba.
Gold is found in Kapoeta State's Ngauro, Namurunyang, Kauto and Napotpot villages, dozens of kilometers outside Kapoeta town. A 20-year-old man whom we shall identify only as Lokuru for safety reasons is one of the local illegal gold miners in Kauto village, some 30 kilometers outside Kapoeta town. Speaking in his native Toposa language, Lokuru says miners often dig more than 20 meters down to find gold.
You can continue digging and the ground might even cover you. That is why people say it is God who is taking care of people. You can continue digging deeper since you know that it is something that can bring food when sold out.
Once they are down that far, Lokuru says, the miners then have to dig sideways in search of the precious mineral. The miners collect a mixture of soil and gold dust underground, then place the mixture in basins or bowls, pour water on top, and shake carefully and gradually. If there is gold inside, it settles at the bottom. This week, Lokuru is looking for a customer to buy 30 grams of precious stones he recently found in Kapoeta.
I came here to Kapoeta and found some white stones. I saw them gathered in one place. I started digging deeper into the ground and found other stones inside. I now have these stones with me, but I am waiting for someone to buy them. They are said to be used for manufacturing mirrors and bulbs. I know this is something many people are selling around here.
In the past, most Kapoeta residents did not know they could earn a living from the illegal trade of mining gold and depended entirely on keeping and selling livestock as their only source of livelihood. In a place like South Sudan, gold mining can be extremely lucrative. Lokuru says 20 grams can sell for 50,000 South Sudanese pounds. Another gold miner whom we will identify only as Mark for safety reasons says a friend introduced him to gold mining at Nahanak village. Speaking in Arabic, Mark says his life has improved because of the lucrative gold trade.
I went there to work. He taught me to dig this way and that way for about 2 months, and I was able to get 10 grams, which I sold out. I used that money for buying cows and goats, which I now take to Juba. That was when I realized gold trade is lucrative.
But Mark stresses that gold mining can be dangerous.
In areas of Namurunyang, the gold is far. People dig up to 8 meters deep, and if one gets, everybody will get into that hole, and the digging continues. Sometimes the hole will collapse and could bury even more than 10 people.
Kapoeta state officials announced a ban on illegal gold mining earlier this year. Locals were told to sell their gold directly to the State Investment Corporation in Kapoeta for 6,000 South Sudanese pounds per gram. Some local middlemen smuggle gold out of the country to be sold in neighboring Uganda or Kenya, where a gram of pure gold fetches up to $35, according to a source who spoke on condition of anonymity for security reasons. The same quantity sold for $50 2 years ago. Kapoeta State Deputy Governor Paul Langa says it is not easy to control illegal gold mining in the state.
The gold is everywhere, ranging from here up to the all the mountains on the ring and down to Boya this way. So it is tremendously hard to control. And after all, this gold is not mined. This is the dust which anybody can just get anywhere, even here on the road here, when we renovated the airport, we got the marum, and some gold was found here. The children were mining just the marum here, where they got gold. So you cannot control it.
The government now encourages local miners to sell the gold to the state at 8,000 South Sudanese pounds per gram, which is more or less the going price on the black market. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Uganda, where Uganda's ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, has proposed scrapping the age limit for presidential candidates and extending the length of presidential term. The proposal has the backing of President Yoweri Museveni, who has ruled Uganda for over 30 years. Halima Athumani has more on the story for VOA from Kampala.
The proposed amendment to Uganda's constitution seeks to scrap the 75-year age limit for presidential candidates and extend the length of presidential terms from 5 to 7 years. The move would benefit long-time President Yoweri Museveni, for whom the parliament scrapped term limits in 2005. The Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Committee approved the constitutional change in a closed-door meeting last week, and the proposal will soon be presented to parliament. President Museveni voiced support for the proposal in a meeting with legislators.
2 terms of 5 years is simply a joke. When you hear somebody talking about it, you know that he just wants to improve his CV so that they say he was president. But to think that he wants to solve the problems of the people is totally out. So there is merit in looking at the 7 years.
But members of the opposition say the ruling National Resistance Movement should let Ugandans vote on the changes through a referendum. Winnie Kiza is the leader of the opposition in parliament.
Whatever Museveni has not done in 30 years, and by the time he finishes this term, it will be 35 years. He can't do it. We came here to serve a 5-year mandate. We can't reach midway, and then we say, look here, we want to change our mandate from 5. And if it is to happen, let Ugandans discuss it and see whether this is the trend they want to go.
There are reports that the bill is being delayed because legislators have demanded $83,000 each before they vote yes. Rafael Majezi, the NRM legislator behind the bill, denied the allegations.
That's untrue. I've not seen even a single shilling, and I don't expect it. Me, I'm prepared. I want this report. We debate it. I get the second reading. Then my bill is passed. We should not go for Christmas with this bill still hanging.
The ruling party requires a yes vote from 2/3 of voting members, 290 in all, for the constitutional amendment to pass. If passed, President Museveni will be allowed to run in the 2021 elections when he will be 77 years old and could rule Uganda for many years to come. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Children are likely to suffer from psychological trauma of war, rape, violence, and poverty than adults. For 10 years, Dramatic Need, a British non-profit group, has helped African children heal by helping them tell their stories through art, drama, and dance. Recently, some of the accounts were adapted for the stage and performed by well-known adult stars for fundraisers in London and New York. VOA's Adam Phillips was in New York for the children's monologues.
That's a video recording of South African children in a township participating in one of Dramatic Need's workshops. A world away in New York's Carnegie Hall, Amber Sainsbury, Dramatic Need's founder, takes a break from rehearsing the children's monologues to explain that it's not only food, clothing, and medicine that traumatized and impoverished children need.
We're not suggesting for a minute that we airdrop art materials into war zones, but once they have the basic necessities of life, but life is still incredibly hard and trauma continues to occur, we believe that there's a merit to using the arts, which are a very gentle way for children to learn and to express themselves and to thereby cope with what they're going through.
Sainsbury says children often find it difficult to put the trauma they've suffered into words.
But they can, if given enough freedom and space, make a mark on a piece of paper or sing a song or present a character that has a thoroughfare between what they've gone through and what their audience is receiving. And there's something inherently therapeutic about that.
In a 2015 London performance of the children's monologues, the British rapper Lil Sims reprised one child's thoughts this way.
Wait. No, this is our story. This is our fate. This is our kingdom. This is our place. This is our freedom. Cut off their chains. This is our struggle. This is our pain. This is our love. This is our trust. This is our daughters.
Many famous actors have performed at Dramatic Need fundraisers. They include Daniel Kaluuya, Trevor Noah, Susan Sarandon, and Nicole Kidman. Here, Benedict Cumberbatch dramatizes one South African child's memory of slaughter in his township.
I don't like to think what might have happened to my friend, what might have happened to the other people that disappeared from my village. I don't like to have that thought in my brain. The bodies that they find every week, rotting in the fields.
In one story, a girl recounts repeated sexual abuse by her uncle. She was afraid to tell her grandmother about it because her rapist was supposed to be the family's protector. Male actor Kit Harington dramatizes the story.
When I was 13 years old, I was raped. It was my uncle, my grandmother's son. He climbed in my window in the middle of the night and it isn't a big enough word to say what he did.
Sainsbury says this girl's odyssey from trauma to healing has been a deeply moving personal story for her as well.
We have worked with her now for over 5 years, and I have seen an extraordinary recovery of self and spirit from her. She is coping incredibly well. We were out there in January and saw her, and she did a beat poetry performance, and it was one of the most moving things that I've ever seen, and I'm so proud of her, and she is an extraordinary example of courageousness and resilience.
Some use dance to move toward recovery. The Via Vondels Pansula dance crew, heard here demonstrating their moves offstage in Carnegie Hall, expresses the emotional range in their art. Pansula dance evolved in South Africa's black townships as a form of exuberant, high-energy protest during the apartheid era. Sindile Nolunga leads the troupe.
Like, the way we dance is the way we show how we live, you see. So whatever we see in the neighborhood, whatever we see local, we do on stage just to show people, like, how we live. All the pain I'm feeling, I'm going to show you the pain through dance. Mm-hmm. All the happiness I'm feeling, like, I'm going to show you through dance. Through my dance, through my body, is the language to your eyes and your mind.
For most of its 10-year history, Dramatic Need has worked in South Africa and Rwanda. But it's now opening a branch office in the Bronx in New York, one of the poorest districts in America. According to Amber Sainsbury, bravery is a human quality and freedom is a human right. And that stands true regardless of the color of your skin, the passport you carry, or the language you use to tell your story. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with a song, Do It Only, by Emmy J. We have been listening to Emmy J with the song Do It Only, talking about the problems of in-laws. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Would like to know what you think about this show. You can reach us at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also check us out on our Facebook site. Our name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.